Welcome back to the Dealmakers Podcast Show with serial entrepreneur Alejandro Cremades, best-selling author of The Art of Startup Fundraising and co-founder at Panthera Advisors. In this podcast, we ask our guests about their successful acquisitions and financing rounds.
Alrighty, hello everyone and welcome to the Dealmaker Show. So today we have a really exciting founder. You know, we're going to be talking about non-dilutive capital and a bunch of other good stuff, especially when it comes to building, scaling, you know, financing, growing. I mean, you name it, all the good stuff. And again, you know, the episode today is going to be packed with adrenaline from, you know, the meltdown of Silicon Valley Bank and how they were able to help, you know, people out, to how they raised, you know, literally over $100 million, whether it's in equity or in debt. And we're going to be hearing about the difference of one and the other. And then also, you know, being able to implement the experience of being a pretty much an investor, deploying capital for startups before he actually went at it and he transitioned to the other side of the table. So without further ado, let's welcome our guest today, Keith Harrington. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Alejandro. Really excited to be here.
So originally from Kansas City, the place that has had quite the year when it comes to football. But, give us a walk through memory lane. How was life growing up over there?
Yeah, well, I've been in Kansas City long enough to remember when the football team and the baseball team sucked. I was born here. I grew up here. All the interesting things that I've done here in Kansas City, if there are any things that were interesting, I guess. But I remember when the Royals won the World Series in 1985. I was just a kid at the time, but I've been here all along. You know, I think I didn't really have a very interesting childhood, to be honest. I had a regular suburban childhood, went to school, didn't get in very much trouble, went to college, got in a little trouble. You know, along the way, really developed a passion for entrepreneurship and what would eventually become what we launched at Novel.
So in your case, I mean, you went up to the University of Kansas City and you thought you were going to be a doctor, but eventually that didn't turn out the way you had hoped for.
No. I wasn't as smart as I thought I was. I went to the University of Kansas. I had big designs on being a doctor. And I took a chemistry class that taught me that I wasn't as smart as I thought I was, and ended up over time transitioning to different majors. I ended up majoring in poli-sci for a little while, psychology for a little while. I think everybody does that. Eventually, wasn't sure what I wanted to do in school and wasn't doing a whole lot of school. And so ended up getting a job at a startup here in Kansas City. And that was kind of the start of my trajectory, really. I got a job at a local ISP, which was a thing back in the 90s, an internet service provider for anybody who is under 30, I guess, listening to this. And that was really cool. I was introduced to the idea of a very small company trying to grow and punch above its weight. Learned a lot there about early stage companies and about building a customer base. And then from there, I actually went to another startup here in Kansas City. A startup which at the time in Kansas City was kind of a big deal. It was called Birch Telecom, raised just a ton of money from blue chip investors around the country in 1998, 99, and 2000. And then the dot-com bubble burst. And all of us like me who were counting our stock options millions watched them go to zero very, very quickly. We were actually slated to go public, if I remember the date right, April 24th of 2000. That ended up getting pulled, and we ended up spending the next 3 or 4 years really doing some emergency M&A, pulling the business out of the dirt a couple of different times. I went through an actual Chapter 11 filing, a bankruptcy filing. That was crazy. But all through that experience, I happened to be lucky enough to work for a guy who, because I was curious, because I was ambitious, let me do things that I had no business doing, to be honest. Along this path, by the way, I finished my degree in finance is where I ended up landing. But that's less interesting than the actual experience that I had at Birch. I went from doing working in the technology and engineering group to eventually doing corporate development, helping with M&A, helping with integration of a company or two. Transformative projects that were really cool. And like I said, I really had no business being involved in those projects, but I pretended like I belonged in those rooms and it seemed to work at the time. I thought it was really cool when I would sit down and talk to I got to be exposed to some different kinds of board members, different kinds of investors at that point. I got to meet some VCs. I didn't know what venture capital was at the time. This is, 2000, 2001. I had no idea what it was, but I was kind of captivated by the concept and by how those guys thought and the kinds of things that they would make bets on. I just thought that was super cool, very sexy at the time. And I also met some private equity guys, and I didn't really like them very much. They were, very focused on spreadsheets and squeezing every dollar they could out of the company at the time, and that was their job. So no harm, no foul. But, I got super entranced by this idea of venture capital, and it was a kind of a tough place to be in Kansas City in the year 2000 because there wasn't any venture capital anymore in Kansas City in the year 2000. So I thought, well, what better thing to do than maybe go get my MBA and set myself up for someday being qualified to get into that space. So I did that. Eventually, the guy that I worked for at Birch Telecom called me in 2009 to tell me he had taken a role leading investments for a state-funded life sciences fund and asked me if I'd like to come do that with him. And I said, well, I don't know anything about life sciences or about early stage investing. And he sort of said, well, neither do I, but maybe we can go figure it out. So that was how I got into venture capital. Just happened to be lucky enough to have a guy who believed that I would be able to help him figure it out and believed that I would be able to figure it out along the way. So I was there for 6 years, made a bunch of interesting investments, learned a lot about early stage companies. My whole job was to support early stage companies.
But what was the biggest lessons? And what were some of those patterns? And because 6 years, gives for a lot.
Well, I'll tell you, the first lesson that I learned was I should not give advice to entrepreneurs because I didn't have any idea what I was talking about. So that was the first thing that I learned. The second thing that I learned was, in early stage investing, the quality of the idea is critical, but it's really about the people who are going to be doing the implementation. What does that team look like? Is their capability to execute, iterate, and keep going? Do they have the persistence necessary to actually achieve success? That was something that you hear that in the sort of in the ether about how do VCs think about making investments. I bet on the jockey, not the horse. And it sounds interesting, but at the end of the day, it's actually true. That is exactly how VCs think. And I had to learn how to think that way because when I first started doing work in early stage investing, I thought a lot about spreadsheets and models and how those would all come out, and nothing ever worked the way that the spreadsheet or the model said it would, right? But if you could get aligned with a founder or a team of founders who had grit and capability and persistence and were able to execute, then we were going to see something interesting happen. That's the biggest lesson I learned, that in venture, it really is about the people. It's about the team.
So tell us about meeting your co-founder.
Yeah. So after making a bunch of life sciences investments, I left that role. I was a co-founder in another fund that focuses on ag tech investments. It's still here in Kansas City, and they're up and running and doing a great job. But what I realized along the way, fundraising and starting to work on generating deal flow there, was I didn't really like being a venture capitalist. And it's because I would sit down and I would talk to an investor or to an entrepreneur, and I would listen to their story, and I would hear the dynamics of their business, the metrics of their business. And unless they fit a very narrow slice, then there was no way that I would be able to help them. And I spent a lot of my time shrugging my shoulders, saying, I don't know how to help you. I certainly can't do anything for you because maybe, for example, you're an entrepreneur with $1 million in revenue and you're growing 30% year over year. Maybe you're flirting with profitability. That's not venture backable, but that was 40, 50% of the companies that I saw. They had something. They maybe didn't have a shot at being a unicorn, but they had a real business and they had a real shot at building something meaningful, having an impact on the community around them and building something that matched their own aspirations. And so I started thinking, if venture doesn't work, maybe there's something else that does. And I started doing some research trying to figure out how do you fund more entrepreneurs more broadly with some kind of tool that's going to actually help them grow. Not like factoring or working capital finance, but something that will actually give them capital that they can use to grow. And just coincidentally, I'm a Kauffman fellow, which happened, I was accepted into that program while I was doing venture. Coincidentally, the Kauffman Foundation, which has no affiliation with the Kauffman Fellows anymore, invited me to a seminar, a design session day at their headquarters, which is here in Kansas City, to talk about funding small companies. It was a conversation about microfinance. And the idea was, hey, we want to unlock $1 trillion of capital for early stage companies and entrepreneurs who don't typically see, you know, equity capital. And so at that meeting, I met a couple of people who would change the course of my trajectory. I met a guy at a firm called CIM who funds other funders. So he provides capital to lenders and other kinds of capital providers for entrepreneurs. Their whole goal is to create more capital in the ecosystem in new forms that are generally non-dilutive. And I also met a couple of entrepreneurs who had taken on a form of financing called revenue-based financing, which I didn't really know anything about. Once it was described to me, it made sense. I kind of understood it. I got so excited about it, though, I left that meeting determined to build a revenue-based financing firm. And so I went out in Kansas City over the next 60 or 75 days, and I had two or three meetings a day with investors, with entrepreneurs, with lawyers, with accountants, with anybody who would talk to me and tell me that the idea was bad, or that it would give me something that I could use to refine it. But the general idea was, okay, I'm going to go raise a revenue-based financing fund and I'm going to fund a bunch of entrepreneurs. Along the way, I sat down with a guy I knew from another program here in Kansas City called Pipeline Entrepreneurs. His name is Carlos Santaquera. And he had recently exited his company, which was an ed tech business that coincidentally, when he was out on the fundraising trail, struggled to really raise money because he was an ed tech business. It wasn't a very sexy industry and his growth was solid, but it wasn't venture growth. So he really struggled to raise capital. He ended up selling the business to Vista Equity Partners. So he did very well. And it took him about 7 years, I think, to find an equity partner that was that would write a check that was meaningful enough for him to help him grow. So we sat down to coffee one day and I shared with him the idea and he said, I totally get it. I would have taken that money in a heartbeat because I knew if I pumped a dollar into my sales machine, I knew how many dollars I would get out. So if you're going to provide a revenue-based financing loan, which would, you know, pay back maybe 1.5x or 1.75x or whatever over 3 or 4 years, I would have taken that money in a heartbeat. Do you want to partner up? And the truth is, I said, I don't think so. I'm just going to figure this out on my own because I'd had a bunch of people offer that to me, like, hey, you want to partner up? And I thought, oh, I can do this on my own. It's a good thing I didn't keep that mindset, by the way. I couldn't have done it on my own, not even close. But I went home that day and my wife said, she asked me how the meeting was and I told her and she goes, let me get this straight. You have said that you want a partner who's built something, preferably someone who sold something and someone who isn't the same as you, right? Like a spreadsheet and a finance and a VC guy. And I said, yeah, that's right. She's like, well, why didn't you take him up on his offer? Why didn't you explore that? And I was like, yeah, good point. So I sent him an email and said, let's go deeper. We got back together and spent a lot of time working together on what would become Novel. And that was about the middle of 2017. And we've been building ever since.
Hey guys, so pardon the interruption here. So I got to tell you that, you know, for those of you that are either looking to raise money or you're looking to get your company acquired, you don't have to be alone. You know, there's a lot of psychology that needs to be blended with strategy, with methodology, with process. And it's very hard. And already doing your business alone is super, super difficult. So I remember, you know, back then when I was an entrepreneur, I kept really experiencing the challenge of either knowing or finding the right type of access to the right type of investors or really understanding what was the right type of guidance, you know, that would carry me through the process, whether it was with seeking money or with going through the acquisition. So that gap that I found being an entrepreneur is ultimately what pushed me later on when I met my co-founder at Pantera, Mike Severson, to really put together an advisory firm where we are guiding entrepreneurs and founding teams through the capital raising efforts, whether you are at a seed stage or at a Series A stage, or if you are going through the process of an acquisition and you are in small to mid-cap type of a cycle. So again, you know, we would help you from guiding you and supporting you from A to C all the way to the end as an extension of your team. And there's no reason for you to do this alone. So with that being said, if you would like to find out more, feel free to send me an email at alejandro@panteraadvisors.com. And we would love to take a look at helping you out.
So then I guess for the people that are listening, what ended up being the business model of Noble Capital? How do you guys make money?
Yeah, so I'll skip the first thing that we did, which was just a standard fund, which really proved to us that the market exists and that we could build something that would serve the need in the market. Novel Capital, which we launched in 2021, is really a fintech business. And what we do is we take company data and use that to underwrite a business and determine the size of a loan that is useful and appropriate for companies that come to us. So we are essentially a fintech lender. We provide non-dilutive capital to B2B software companies all around the country. The business model is we lend, and at the moment we are actually building new tools for entrepreneurs, because one of the things that we've learned is we have a really robust view of the companies that we work with. And so we are starting to turn those insights that we see, turn those insights around for the CEOs that we loan money to, so that they can see what we see and start to make better capital decisions. Because sometimes getting a loan is not the right answer. Just as oftentimes getting equity is not the right answer. So our goal is really to be a one-stop shop for insights and capital. We're going to help you as a CEO make your capital decisions. And then when it comes to non-dilutive capital, we've got what you need.
So let's talk about two of the capital raising for you guys, because yeah, you've raised over $100 million, whether that is broken down in debt or in equity. Yeah. So give us a breakdown of how that looks like, and also what was the journey of raising both?
Oh, man. Fundraising is hard. Don't let anybody tell you different. So yeah, we've raised about $120 million in debt to deploy to the entrepreneurs that we fund. And we've raised a little over $15 million in equity for the company itself to support growth and new initiatives, software development, and the like. You know, the journey is like any fundraising journey, I think, that that any entrepreneur has ever taken on. It's just it's hard. And at the end of the day, it is a function of how hard are you going to work to get that fundraising done? I have Carlos has a pretty great network in fundraising circles. So we know a lot of VCs because we're both Kauffman fellows. So we can easily meet and talk to most of the investors that we want to meet and talk to on the equity side. And that's great, but it doesn't get any deals done. So at the end of the day, what always matters is how do the metrics of your business stack up to expectations? And what does the future look like for your business? So, you know, we've been able to show really solid execution since the beginning, really solid growth on the loan side, also really solid product development that we're releasing. You know, every couple of months we're releasing a new feature or a new product. And that's what got the VCs that invested in our latest round super excited. They see that we've got strong credit standards, we've got a strong portfolio, we've got software coming out. We've got a business where the revenue flywheel is running now, and we're growing. And this is the right time to take on growth capital and really go. Raising the debt capital. So neither one of us had ever done anything like that before. That was one of the hardest things. I think that was one of the hardest things I've ever done professionally, and it was because neither one of us, neither Carlos nor I really spoke debt. It's a totally different language. And so we had to learn how to be credit guys out on the fundraising trail, how to talk the credit language. I remember there were times, our current lender is going to I don't know if they're going to laugh at this or if they're going to, if this is going to make them cry, but I remember sitting in, I was so naive. I remember sitting in fundraising meetings, talking to these lenders, and they would ask me for stuff. And I'd be typing notes into Evernote. And I'd be like, yeah, totally. I'm absolutely going to send you that. And I wouldn't have any idea what I just agreed to. Like, I don't know what you just asked me for. So I'm typing in a note. And then when I get off the call, I remember looking at Carlos one day and saying, what's a loan tape? What does that even mean? And it was just the basics. We had to learn the basics about how to go raise debt. It was extraordinarily difficult. But, you know, it's one of those things where we learned so much in that process that it actually helped us become better lenders and a better steward of the capital that we've been able to raise. So we were naive. I think we're a little bit less naive these days. But that was a really hard fundraise.
So what about Silicon Valley Bank, all that debacle, and also how do you think that has shaped up as well the way that you guys typically engage with providing non-dilutive capital to companies?
Yeah, man, that was terrifying when all of that started to happen. I remember we were watching what felt like the world falling apart in that moment. You know, in retrospect, I look at it and I'm kind of like, it seems like a blip, but in the moment, it was just sheer panic. We did not have any exposure at SVB. We didn't have cash there, but we had cash at banks that were starting to also falter in that moment. So we had to do a bunch of movement, cash movement and cash protection, just to keep, just so that we could not be worried. And we were able to do that pretty quickly. What was, I think, really great about that time was we were able to very quickly engage with companies in our portfolio who did struggle and did have some exposure at SVB and help them navigate that crisis, sometimes with connections to other banks so that money could be moved, sometimes with capital in the moment. But we did a lot to actually help the companies that we were already working with navigate that crisis and survive it and then come out the other side and to thrive. And, you know, that was tough. But one of the things that I think has been really interesting since then is we have seen demand for non-dilutive capital for early stage software companies just absolutely skyrocket. So, you know, SVB melted down. That was bad for a lot of people. But what we are seeing is, and this is sustained over the last year plus now, 15 months, I think, entrepreneurs are very hyper aware now of where can I get capital that, and where can I get it from a source that's going to be safe and reliable. And we've really benefited from that because we've got a strong track record. We've got an excellent reputation in the market. We spend a lot of time making sure that we're always doing right by the entrepreneurs that we serve. And so we've seen a significant uptick in demand and a significant uptick in originations as a result. And that's been sustained over the last 15 months. So, you know, I don't want to say SVB going the way it did was good for us, but it certainly helped us touch and help more entrepreneurs along the way.
So imagine you were to go to sleep tonight, Keith, and you wake up in a world where the vision of Noble Capital is fully realized. What does that world look like?
Yeah, it's a world where entrepreneurs have a single source to go figure out how to fundraise for their business. So one of the things that I know as an entrepreneur, which by the way, I just want to say this, being an entrepreneur is way harder than being a venture capitalist. I just want everybody to know that. I can settle that question without equivocation right now. But I think one of the things that entrepreneurs, one of the key challenges that entrepreneurs have, right? They got to grow their companies. They got so many things to figure out. And then they've got this capital question. What kind of capital do I need? When do I need it? How should it be structured? Who should I get it from? What should the terms be? Who's a good person to take it from? Who's not a good person to take it from? That is so complicated. And if you don't have a great network or a whole bunch of mentors who can help you think this through, you're in trouble because this is hard. And when you make bad decisions about capital, you can actually kill your company. So to me, giving entrepreneurs a single spot, a single source of insights and advice for capital and a place where they can actually get capital at the same time is absolutely critical. It could be game changing for a company, right? Because What if they make a bad decision? I've seen tons of entrepreneurs make bad capital decisions, and I've seen them have to shut their companies down as a result. And so that's the problem that we're out there solving. We understand that it's hard. We understand that it's complicated. But we also understand that it's not rocket science. It's not magic. We can actually build the tools that help you as a founder figure out, I need venture now. I need debt over here for this particular purpose. Maybe I need, you know, a different kind of capital, working capital financing, invoice financing for this purpose over here. How do I stack this stuff up? How do I make it work for my business and do so while building value? That's such a hard thing to do if you don't have the tools at your disposal. Well, we do. So that's what we're trying to build.
So imagine now that you've been at it now for close to 7 years, you know, with Noble Capital. You know, that's like 100 years in the corporate world. But let's say you let's say you're able to go back in time, right? You know, to October 2017, where you guys were kicking things off. And let's say you're able to have a sit down with that younger self, with that younger Keith, and being able to give your younger self one piece of advice for launching the business. What would that be and why, given what you know now?
Just go. Just go. That's it. It's the simplest advice. One of the things that, and this is just a feature of my programming, it's the software that runs in my head. I think a little bit, probably too much before acting. And I think you have to be careful that there's a balance there, right? But I spent a lot of time trying to optimize for things that in the end didn't matter. And it was just a function of inexperience and a function of a little bit of fear of failure. And so what I would tell myself, if I could go back and have coffee with myself 7 years ago, I would say, just go. You'll figure it out. You're not, you don't need to have the answer to every question now, but just go and you'll figure it out as you go. And that's the thing that was most difficult for me starting this journey. And it is also the thing that I enjoy the most about this journey, is that I will end up in a predicament that I don't have an answer to. And now I got to think on my feet and I got to figure it out. And I enjoy that a lot. That's actually one of the most fun parts of entrepreneurship.
So Keith, for the people that are listening that would love to reach out and say hi, what is the best way for them to do so?
Yeah, you can get me. My email address is keith@novelcapital.com. You can get me on LinkedIn, Keith Harrington. You'll find me, Keith Harrington, Novel Capital. Those are the two best ways to get me.
Amazing. Well, easy enough. Well, Keith, thank you so much for being on the Dealmaker Show today. It has been an honor to have you with us.
Thank you, Alejandro. The honor has been all mine.
If you like the show, make sure that you hit that subscribe button. If you could leave a review as well, that would be fantastic. And if you got any value, either from this episode or from the show itself, share it with a friend. Perhaps they also appreciate it. So also remember that if you need any help, whether it is with your fundraising efforts or with selling your business, you can reach me at alejandro@pantheraadvisors.com.
You've reached the end of another episode of the Dealmakers Podcast. For free resources and materials, head over to alejandrocremades.com. Thank you for listening and see you at the next episode.